I've been up here for like 30 seconds. It doesn't count on my sermon times. So that timer doesn't start yet. Okay. If we haven't met before yet, my name is Dan, and I have the privilege of serving here as the teaching pastor alongside Jason Phillips, who is our campus life pastor. We are so grateful that you are here with us today. We are in the middle of a newer sermon series that we started last week called Forgiven. Let me give you a couple things as we're just getting oriented here right at the beginning. First of all, if this is your first time at LifePoint, or maybe you've been checking out LifePoint online or somewhere else, we would love to help you. Just think through what a next step might be for you, just to learn a little bit more about what it would look like to be part of this community here in Worthington. One of the easiest ways you can do that, you can just come up and talk with me or Jason after the message, after the service today, or you can scan that QR code that's on the seat right in front of you that will take you to lpguest.com. You can find a welcome card there. It takes about 30 seconds. To fill out. And then you will also find there a link to our message notes. And so if you want to, you can take notes along with the message today. You can email those notes back to yourself, even posting questions there, because the things that we're talking about, especially in this series, are going to bring up hard questions. In fact, I'll say this, there's going to be a lot of questions that I kind of tease up or I'm hoping to like uncover for us as a community, and I'm not going to be able to answer them in this message. So I want us to be thinking about hard things together. And one of the gifts of being part of a local church is that we get to do this in community. Like no question is off limits. We can talk through these things, wrestle with them together. You can find those, the link to post those questions. It'll get sent to me. You can find them in the notes app right along in the message notes today. Okay, if you have a Bible with you, meet me in Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. The last 2 weeks, we are in a short series looking at one of the stories of Jesus where he begins to talk about the desperately tricky topic of forgiveness. And I say that it's tricky, not because it's hard for us to understand what Jesus is trying to tell us about forgiveness. It's tricky because the moment we start this conversation, all of us in this room will have a specific kind of relationship that comes to mind. A relationship that maybe isn't the way that it ought to be, isn't the way we want it to be. We immediately take inventory of all of our relationships, past and present. And I'm sure many of them are fine. No significant issues. But all of us have at least a few that are just complicated. Something's not playing out the way you thought it would or hoped it would. It might be a tension or frustration or unmet expectations, or maybe something much deeper than that, a deeper painful wound because of something that was done to you or taken from you. And the closer that relationship is, the more complex this whole idea that Jesus is trying to talk about gets. When that relationship we're thinking of is a family member, a spouse, your parents, or your kids. And while it probably feels like forgiveness is something we ought to be willing to extend, I think at the end of the day, many of us are left with this lingering question. How? So if you're not there yet, meet me in Matthew 18. I'm going to pray for us this morning, and we'll get started. Father, this morning, before we do anything else, we pause before you. And we acknowledge that in some mysterious way, you know everything about every single one of us walking into this room today. You know our entire story. You know the things that we have wrestled with. You know the things that we haven't shared with anybody else. You know that even some of us have been able to sit through and be part of a church for decades. All the while, we've had this like deep, growing frustration, not even with other people, but with you. You know where we have struggled to extend forgiveness. You know every instance where we are in need of forgiveness. You know the whole thing. And yet over and over and over again, we are confronted with the image in the scriptures of you as a loving, kind, and gracious Father. And so today we ask that you would give us ears to hear your word, your voice, and eyes to see your realities. Where we may need to rethink parts of our own story, would you graciously walk us through that process? And where we have these relationships that are right now broken, not where they need to be, we ask, God, that you would bring healing. And so we trust you to this end, and we pray all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, let's go ahead and get started. If you were here last week, let me catch you up to speed just a little bit. Jesus is in the middle of a story about forgiveness. It's what we call a parable, and sometimes we call this the parable of the unforgiving servant. It involves a king and a servant who was deeply in debt to this king. And the main idea that we talked about last week was that what we think of as forgiveness in its simplest form can be defined this way. It is releasing a debt that is owed to you. We could put air quotes around that word debt because it's not just, you know, money, it's relational debt that we can get into with other people. Forgiveness is releasing a debt that is owed for you. And the big piece we landed on is that this is a process. A process that may take way longer than we anticipated, often is not a single moment in time where we say some magic words and then never have to think about this thing ever again. Sometimes it works like that, but many times the issue at hand seems so deep and maybe painful or has caused such turmoil in you that we find ourselves unable to just move on with the rest of our lives. Forgiveness is a process, and it begins as we recognize first that we have been forgiven. As followers of Jesus, we initiate the process of forgiveness by recognizing the depths to which we have been forgiven. That's what we talked about last week. And so Jesus begins to tell this story of a king and a servant. And in the process of settling the king's accounts, the king sentences this servant to be sold along with his family and all of his possessions until this debt can be paid off. But I want you to look at what happens as the servant is pleading his case before the king. Matthew 18, verse 27, it says this, "And out of pity or compassion for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt." The point of the whole story is to illustrate what forgiveness looks like and how it works in both of our vertical relationship with God and our horizontal relationships with one another. But you'll notice from last week, that's not where this story ends. Keep reading verse 28. "But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and seized him and began to choke him, saying, 'Pay what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will repay you.' But he refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt." Now, I want you to remember, the king has just looked at this first servant owing 10,000 talents and out of compassion for him has released him from that debt. And like we talked about last week, that debt doesn't magically disappear. Like it doesn't just go away. In forgiving this first servant, the king chooses to absorb the loss. He chooses to take the hit. He incurs the debt so that the servant can be freed from his need to repay the king. So here's my question. Why is it then that given the same exact opportunity, the servant does the opposite? You know, one of the things I love about the stories that Jesus tells all through the New Testament is that they are often simple, in that we're generally able to track with his main points. But there's a unique brilliance in the simplicity of the stories that Jesus tells. You see, his stories have a way of inviting us to imagine ourselves within the story as characters in this story. And as a master storyteller, Jesus can give us enough details to get the boundaries of this story and his main point. But it also allows us to fill in the blanks a little bit, not to change the meaning of what he's saying, but to explore all the different nuance of the story that he's telling. And that's what I want to do today. I want to explore the nuance with three possibilities as we kind of get into the head of this servant, which I think is what Jesus invites us to do as he tells the story. And the question we're going to ask three times is, why does the servant respond the way that he does? Like, what is going on in him that would lead him to take the exact opposite posture of what he has just experienced from the king? And as we read the story this way, I think we find and maybe uncover a few barriers to forgiveness that I think shed light on why forgiveness is such a hard aspect of our own lives. Listen, I know I spent the last 2 weeks to say that this whole process is complex. This is not me just finding another creative way to say the same thing. Instead, what I want to do is I want to look closely at these three barriers. We'll see how we might encounter them in our own lives, in our marriages, in our parenting, in our friendships. And my hope is that this is actually going to give us some language to describe what may actually be going on in our own lives, to name it, maybe for the first time, and then get some clarity on where to go from there. Sound good? All right, let's get started real quick. I want you to make sure we're tracking and that we're on the same page about what I mean when I use that word barriers to forgiveness. I want you to think about it this way. Earlier this week, I was just trying to clear my head a little bit, and so I went out for a hike, or what you guys from out west would call a walk, and I went over to High Banks Metro Park. And I started to go down the trail a little bit, one of my favorite trails, and I noticed this time that off to the left, there was this little, you know, side trail. And so I decided, like, you know, why not? I'll follow the trail a little bit. And it went down this pretty steep hill to the bottom of a ravine. I got to the bottom of the ravine, and there was this, like, open clearing, just a few trees, but there's a clearing. And on the far edge of the clearing, there is this creek just kind of steadily running through the edge of the clearing. But on the bank of that creek was a stone wall, maybe 45, 50 feet high. And I noticed that the trail I was on came to an end. It was a dead end. Right? Not because I couldn't figure out how to move forward, but because there was no way forward. This is the kind of barrier that I'm talking about. This is what I want you to envision when I talk about barriers today. All right, now, like I said, we look at the story Jesus is telling. I think we find at least three barriers to forgiveness, three points where the trail we are on hits a dead end and we tend to get stuck. Here's the first one. I'm going to call it the barrier of fatigue. Let me explain. Think back a little bit to why Jesus is telling this story at all in the first place. Peter, one of his closest followers, has asked him a question back in verse 21. You can see it on the screen behind me. Peter came up to him and said, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times?" Right? And the way that he asked this question, he's thinking about some like ongoing repeated issue. Like he's really asking, Jesus, how many times am I supposed to forgive the same person for the same thing? You ever been there? Think about the kind of relationship tension that you experience in your own life. Sometimes there is this like flashpoint moment, this thing that happens. Something causes a fight and a rift, and you can look back and say, like, right there, when that happened, that's when we started to fall apart. There's a massive betrayal, a moment of real and lasting harm. But how often do you find tension and friction in the small stuff? Someone's their tone, for example. And it might not bother you the first time you talk to them, but the 21st time you talk to them, you're kind of over it. Or that they forget to do the thing that you have asked them to do every week. Right? So it's like, how is this not always on your radar? Come on, man. I asked you to do this last week too. Or the person who always seems to have the answer, even when you didn't ask for an answer or their opinion. And now you really don't care about either one of them, but they just keep offering this to you. I was talking to someone recently who was trying to make sense of a frustration with a family member. And what made it really tricky is that they couldn't pinpoint like one specific way that this person had sinned against them or anything like that. There wasn't just like one major thing that happened. It was this ongoing pattern. It was this like tone or these quick responses that came over and over and over and over again. And he was like, man, I'm tired of it. See, the question behind the question for this person was a lot like Peter's. How long do I have to put up with that? Again, have you been there? Be honest for a second. You ever get to that moment, and even think about your closest relationships right now. You ever get to that moment where you're just like, I'm done. I'm done. And that might not even be, this is where it gets tricky, it might not even be the defining characteristic of the relationship, and you might even know that it's really an empty threat because you're not really done, but you're just done feeling this way. But there are these moments where these small things begin to build and build and build and build and build and build, and sometimes you can put some distance between that person, like limit the interaction, but what happens when you can't really get away from it? What happens when that is your family and they live in the same town? What happens when that's a sibling or a parent or when it's one of your kids? What if you're married to that person? I think we hit the barrier of fatigue every time in our heart of hearts we say something like, I don't know how I can keep doing this. And all of a sudden, those little things, those nameless things, they finally hit a tipping point, and you just feel like you are done dealing with this. What makes the barrier of fatigue especially tricky is that we tend not to associate this with unforgiveness. We don't even think about forgiveness at all. We tend to think about it as like an entirely different issue because you really can't name the one big thing that you're hurt by or angry about. And so we tell ourselves, I'm just tired. I just need some space. I just need a break. And listen, sometimes that's true, but not always. Think back to my hiking story for a moment. When we hit the barrier of fatigue in our relationships, we find ourselves standing right in that same type of clearing that I was in. After going down the hill into the ravine, standing at the clearing, realizing I am looking at a dead end. We tell ourselves in our fatigue, just need to sit down a little bit and catch my breath. Just need a break from the tension, a break from the patterns. But there's a hidden danger in that clearing. And if you stay there long enough, something starts to happen to your own heart. The exhaustion slowly begins to harden. The barrier of fatigue tricks us into thinking we're just taking a necessary break, when in reality, we're stuck at a dead end. And I wonder if you've been stuck there. It's not the only barrier we see. Look again at the story. Verse 28. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, pay what you owe. Right? So this servant, who has just been forgiven, finds somebody who owes him. Right? Let's put this into perspective for just a moment. In the first century, payment for a single day's work was generally 1 denarii. Right? He's found someone who owes him 100. Roughly 3 months of work, that kind of thing. remember, this first servant was forgiven a debt of 10,000 talents. It's a different set of money, right? A single talent was approximately 6,000 denarii, meaning a single talent was worth about 6,000 days' wages. He's been forgiven 10,000 talents. That is 60 million days' wages, roughly 164,384 years of work. If you account for holidays like festivals and the Sabbath day, this is closer to 200,000 years of work that he has just been forgiven. The point being, he cannot pay this back. And so when he finds this other servant, why does he violently grab him by the neck, choke him, and demand 100 denarii? Why does he demand 3 months' day's wages? That's the obvious tension in the story, right? Like, obviously, he should have been willing to be forgiving because he was forgiven. That's the arc of the story. We get that. That's why when you read this story, of course this part sounds so wrong to all of us. You know what he was supposed to do. I know what he was supposed to do. There is no mystery in what Jesus is trying to get across right here. So why is it that I, as a pastor, someone who claims to follow the life and teachings of Jesus, someone who stands up here almost every week talking about God's forgiveness, how you can experience it in your own life, why is it that I can so deeply struggle to forgive my own wife and my kids of the small stuff? See, it's really easy. To say something like, you should be forgiving because you have been forgiven. There's truth in that statement. But it's easy to say that without ever acknowledging that standing between those two realities is a giant barrier, a dead end. And I think this one we're looking at is the barrier of fear. Think about it this way. Again, asking the question, why does he respond the way that he does? And I read this story. And the longer I've looked at it, I started to see a man who is unable to forgive, not because he doesn't want to, but because maybe deep down, he's actually afraid that the king still expects to be repaid. See, I see a man who needs that 100 denarii, not because he's worried about his own finances, right? He would be overjoyed with what he has just been forgiven, but because at the end of the day, he still is driven by this need to prove something to the king, that he actually is somewhat dependable, that he actually is somewhat capable of something. It is his way of trying to show the king that while he might be bankrupt, he is not worthless, which might be what he's really afraid of. In other words, even though his debt has been forgiven, he is still operating as if he's really just been put on a payment plan. He demands repayment from someone else, not because he doesn't understand the mechanics of forgiveness, but because he does not believe them himself. He still sees the king primarily, not as a father who has been gracious and kind to a child, but as his debt collector. He doesn't see what's actually taken place. He doesn't think that he was forgiven because he is loved. He thinks he will really be loved only if and when he can produce. Listen, like, if that sounds like a stretch to you, I get it. But I'd invite you to think really carefully about how you actually view God. Right? And I think this takes a degree of honesty with ourselves. Remember, Jesus has told this whole story as a parallel to how God relates with us. And maybe the most probing question that we can ask here is, what does my unforgiveness reveal I actually think about God? That's not an easy question to answer. Because if we're constantly struggling to extend grace to someone else, it may be an indication that we haven't actually absorbed the grace that God has offered to us first. If I believe that God is actually this cosmic boss who is still tracking my hours, looking for my his ROI, monitoring my mistakes, and waiting for me to mess up just so that he can pull my file, then of course, I'm going to keep a file on you because that's what he does to me. If I believe God's grace is something that I have to fundamentally earn by being good enough, then I am going to demand that the people in my life earn forgiveness by being sorry enough. If I believe that God expects me to pay him back for my past, I'm going to spend my life making sure that everyone else pays me back for their past. You see, our inability to forgive often exposes this barrier of fear that the king's forgiveness towards us isn't actually finished. We're still on a payment plan. And so we become debt collectors in our marriages, in our parenting, in our friendships, because deep down we're afraid that we still owe a debt. And once again, I think this barrier leaves us standing right back at the clearing at the bottom of this ravine, with no way forward, stuck at a dead end, afraid of what might happen next. Let me give you one more. We really only have time for two of these, but, you know, it's Worthington. We got three, so. Look again at verse 28. I want you to focus on this first part. This is another one of those, like, open-ended aspects of the way that Jesus tells this story. Verse 28 again, just look at the first two lines or so. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Now, remember real quick, the New Testament that we have, that we're reading right now, this was not originally written in English. It was written in Greek, Koine Greek, translated into English. And so what we're looking at right now is one very good way to translate this passage from ancient Greek into modern English. And the way that this is written, there's a couple ways you could read this, right? I think the most natural way to read it is that, like, he went out, he was released from the king, and he went about his day, and he happened to run in to another servant. But there's another way you could translate this verse. Let me show you another way to translate this. This is from the Bible for everyone. Another good translation of this passage says it this way. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And all of a sudden, it doesn't just sound like he happened upon this servant who owed him. It actually might sound like maybe he went out looking for that servant, doesn't it? And I'm not trying to say that one translation is better than the other. If you want to have that conversation, I'm happy to have that conversation. I just think that the way that Jesus tells this story, he intentionally leaves this open-ended for us. And if we kind of explore this second possibility, that the servant went out looking for the third servant, I think we find our third barrier. Ask the question, if he's just been forgiven, why would he go looking for someone who owes him? And I want to be really careful here, because what we're about to talk about is heavy. And I don't for a moment want to cheapen any of the real pain and hurt that I know some of you have experienced in this life. We've talked about it. I think the church has sometimes talked about forgiveness in a way that is unintentionally shallow, in a way that doesn't just... It just doesn't really seem to account for the sheer amount of pain or anger that you actually feel. And try as you might, you have never been able to flip the switch to make it go away. It's often talked about not just as a good thing to do, but as a duty for you as a follower of Jesus. And yet, how is forgiveness supposed to work when there is one of those big moments that you can point to? When you can pinpoint a horrific thing that was done to you. And maybe it's something you have never talked about in your entire life, something that lurks in the shadows of your story. think what some of you have heard over the years is that that kind of forgiveness is really just about letting go so that you can move on from this thing. And I'm not saying there was malintent to whoever told you that, but I'm also willing to bet with those big flashpoint things that have happened in our lives, when you have been told you need to be forgiving of them, what we tend to hear, what you have heard, is that what happened to me doesn't really matter. Right, add to this the typical Christian formula for forgiveness. Much of what we just talked about, that if you really believe that God forgave you, then you should at least be willing to forgive them. And all of a sudden, it doesn't just sound like someone else saying what happened to you doesn't really matter in the end. It kind of sounds like God might be saying that to you. This is the third barrier. I'll call it the barrier of justice. And I think it is the most formidable one that we encounter. See, when you go back to the story, maybe the servant goes out looking for a debtor, because what's become apparent to him is that if the king really was that forgiving, then that must mean he doesn't really care about injustice. That he doesn't really care about what is right, what is good. I mean, how could he be if he's so willing to just in the spur of a moment, because he feels something inside of himself, forgive such an enormous debt? It's the paradox we talked about forgiveness over the last 2 weeks. Like, there are those things that are just so big that you wonder, like, how could a loving God possibly forgive that? So he goes out looking for someone, looking to exact justice from those in debt to him, because somebody has to do it. Somebody has. Obviously, the king doesn't really seem to be that concerned about this whole thing. And I'm calling this a barrier to forgiveness, because it feels like if you forgive them, you're letting them off the hook and you're letting evil win. And so at that barrier, we do the opposite. We hold tight to the debt with our hands around the throat, because it feels like if you don't do that, nobody else is going to hold this person accountable. We become the judge and the collector because we are terrified that forgiveness might actually mean our pain doesn't matter. Here's the tragic reality of this barrier. Demanding to exact justice ourselves doesn't actually heal the wound. It leaves us just as stuck as we were. We find ourselves right back in that clearing at the bottom of a ravine, staring at a massive stone wall with nowhere left to go. Stuck at a dead end. And listen, I don't pretend to know where any of you are at. I don't especially think it's my job to tell you where you're at. I don't pretend to know what your barrier is. And by the way, having one doesn't mean that you are weak or you messed up somewhere. I mean, every single one of us has barriers to forgiveness, and they are desperately hard. Maybe it's one of those three. Maybe it's another one we haven't even talked about. I mean, these barriers are a part of what it means to be human. Like we said last week, there is nothing natural or automatic about forgiveness. But what they all have in common, whatever barrier it is that each one leaves us in that clearing at the bottom of a ravine, staring at a dead end. And the reality of being a pastor is, like, I can't look at you, even sitting down and chatting with you about these things. I couldn't look at you and tell you if you are really stuck in the clearing. From the outside, looking in, I mean, most of it, we look like we have, life is moving along at least okay. We show up, we smile, we go to work, we raise our family, we spend time with our friends and coworkers. I mean, the only way you can actually diagnose what's happening in your heart in that clearing is by paying attention to what's happening in your inner world. An honest conversation. I think there's a word that describes what happens to us in the clearing the longer we stay there. It's an incredibly descriptive word. The word is resentment. And it's interesting. I think we know this word. It's a strong word, and we tend to use it to describe a particular kind of hatred or disgust for something. But that's not really what the word means. It's actually a French word. I'm not going to pronounce it because one of you will make fun of me, and you know who you are. It's actually a French word that means to re-feel. The same friend who grew up speaking French said, it's the word you would use to describe, like if you had a particularly bad breakup and then ran into your ex a couple months later and they were seeing someone else. Like all of a sudden, everything that hits you in that moment, you are re-feeling all of it. It's that emotional wave. It's the resentment. It hurts and it is powerful. See, when we hit a barrier, the bottom of the ravine, stop walking the path of forgiveness, we don't just stay neutral. No, we eventually re-feel. We begin to resent. And when the person we've encountered this barrier towards is the object, we begin to resent them. We re-feel, we retell the story of what happened. When you're stuck at the barrier of fatigue, fear, or justice, you re-feel the pain over and over and over again. You re-feel the offense. You re-feel the anger. This is the loop that keeps playing in your mind while you are driving. It is the argument you somehow always seem to keep re-winning in the shower. You're reliving the exact moment of hurt over and over and over again. There's a scene in the book, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, that I think captures this so well. Early on in the journey, the hobbits are wandering through this ancient, heavy woods called Highbanks. And eventually, they wander down into a deep clearing. And a strange, heavy sleepiness washes over them as they are listening to the sound of the river on the edge of the clearing. And so they begin to sit down right next to this massive willow tree. And then the story, they fall into a deep, unnatural sleep is what it says. And as they do, the roots of the tree trunks literally begin to swallow them up. The forest consumes them as they're lulled into this sleep. Friends, this is what resentment does to us. See, we think that we're just taking a break at the bottom of the ravine in this welcoming clearing. We tell ourselves that we are just protecting our hearts. We're just demanding and defending justice or catching our breath from the exhaustion of the whole thing. But as we sit there, re-feeling the hurt, the resentment grows and grows and grows, and eventually we find ourselves consumed. Now, if you're hearing this and realizing I'm stuck in the clearing, I want you to hear this loud and clear. Number one, that is a deeply human experience. You are not stuck there because you just messed everything up. No, all of us will find ourselves there. Every single one of us encounters these barriers. Every single one of us has a natural gravity that pulls us down into the deep, heavy sleep of resentment. But here's the rest of this story from The Fellowship of the Ring. The hobbits don't end up saving themselves. The three-part series would have been a lot shorter if it ended here. They can't just decide to wake up and go on their way. They are entirely stuck and they need to be rescued. And so someone else, a character who knows the forest and is not trapped by it, has to step into that clearing to rouse them, to wake them back up and pull them out of the roots that they are trapped in. And once they are rescued, they aren't just magically teleported to their destination. This rescuer essentially looks at them and says, "Follow me." And so they have to get up and they have to trust this guide who they don't really know, and they don't really know where they are going. And they have to make this grueling, exhausting trek back up the steep hill to get out of the ravine that they were stuck in the first place. And this is the what moving past the barrier actually looks like, because there so often is not just a way forward to plow through it. No, forgiveness, you see, it is not a cheap, shallow, just let it go and move on. It is an active rescue. You see, when we realize that we are stuck in resentment, we are finally in a place to let Jesus step into our clearing as he pulls us out and says, "Follow me." And you may have no idea. No idea what that particular relationship is going to look like tomorrow. You may not know how the boundaries are going to work, or how the trust will be rebuilt, if it can even be rebuilt. And make no mistake, the hike out of the ravine is incredibly steep. That's why we stay in the clearing in the first place. But in choosing to follow him, choosing to follow Jesus in a moment by moment decision, we are choosing not to be stuck. We are moving. You're following the one who has already forgiven your debt, and the one who knows how to lead you out. So friends, this is what I want for all of us, that we would follow him. That we would follow Jesus. Being a Christian sometimes gets flattened out today to essentially mean something like you are in agreement with a set of theological ideas. But friends, there's so much more going on to it than that. It's about following the rescuer, the one who has come to pull you out, to set you free, to revive you from the poison of resentment. You're here today and you've been following Jesus for years, yet you still feel like you're completely stuck. I want you to know, you know, you're recognizing that the theology you have, like, that may not be the thing that helps you. You may know that you're supposed to forgive, but you still find yourself sitting down in that clearing, trapped by fatigue or fear or demand for justice. If that's where you are at right now, then I want you to know that Jesus doesn't just wake you up and leave you down there. In fact, we actually have a vivid picture of this rescue this morning. In just a few moments, we're going to celebrate two baptisms. And baptism is a direct illustration of exactly what we have been talking about. When someone goes down into the water, and you will see this happen behind me, it is a picture of leaving an old way of life behind, leaving the ledgers, the fear, the exhaustion, and waking from the heavy sleep of resentment. It is a complete act of surrender. And then you will watch this person be pulled up out of the water. It is a picture of the rescue that Jesus extends to us. It is a picture of being washed clean by a king who has absorbed our debt and being raised to walk a completely new path. It's a public declaration that says, "I was trapped, but I have been roused. I have been awakened. I have been rescued, and am now following him out." And as we celebrate these two baptisms today, I want to invite you all to let this image speak loudly to you. Maybe to reawaken you. As you watch them being pulled out of the water, let it remind you that you do not have to stay seated in the clearing. You can leave your ledger of everybody else's wrongs behind you. You can take the hand of the rescuer and let him lead you forward. Let's pray. So, Father, we do stop and ask that you would speak to us. In these few moments, Lord, remind us that you have seen all of our story. And you are the one who knows
at what barrier we might be stuck at right now. It might be fatigue, it might be fear, it might be justice, it might be something else entirely. Lord, you know. And you know how easy it is for us to succumb to the allure of resentment. In refeeling over and over and over again, Lord, and you know how painful that can be for us. And yet, Lord, you also are the one who comes down to us to extend your hand to pull us up, saying, follow me. And so today, Lord, that may be true of us. Some of us have been holding on to something for a long time. Remind us that in choosing to follow you, we are not saying that none of it mattered in the first place. We are not saying that you do not care about justice and that we are letting evil win. But we are saying that we are choosing to leave the ledger behind, choosing to stop staring at a dead end, and choosing to follow you to healing. And so, Lord, if there's a conversation we need to have today, maybe we need to be sensitive to what your voice may be saying to us right now. Maybe there is a particular next step that you are challenging us with. Maybe it's a conversation just with you. Maybe it's with a close family member, a spouse, a relative, a friend that we need to wake up from the slumber of resentment. God, be our help. Be our guide. We thank you. Good morning.